This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Before we address exhibits on the Kushner reconsideration motion, I do believe that in light of Dr. Smith's testimony, the court will allow very limited testimony by the Kushners on the specific issue of what Sally Smith wore or said when she came in. We are not, however, going into everything else that the Kushners may have or may not have experienced because of it. So it's going to be a couple of questions, and then that's it.
Understood. Just for the record, the Kushners' interactions with Hoffman and Sally Smith were in August 2018, over almost 2 years after.
So I will allow it, but
it will be targeted.
I don't know if this is you or Mr. Anderson or Ms. Lawrence.
I don't know until he tells me either. So.
Okay. It's got to be so very narrow.
Understood.
Okay. What's next?
Your Honor, exhibits? For exhibits, yes. We would like to admit photographs 3404, 1A. There's three of them. What we're seeking to admit, they're recent social media postings. If you want to put those up. This was taken within within the last week. We can get it authenticated as to the exact date. And I can show you, I don't know if there's an objection or not.
How many are there?
There's three.
Can we see them?
Sure. 3404 1A, 3404 2A. And 3404 6A. And this one would be from Halloween, I think, over the weekend. It was posted to social media. Any objection?
No.
So I'll make the proffer. These are extremely important to the defense. On direct examination of Maya Kowalski on October 13th, do you need a copy of the transcript, Your Honor?
No.
On a direct examination of Maya Kowalski, she was asked about her aggravation of symptoms, and of course, in a medical malpractice trial where they're claiming aggravation, it's up to the plaintiff to be able to say this is what her baseline was, and this is how she's doing now. This was the question she was asked. Well, they actually asked it about eight different occasions. But here's one that's specific. Page 19. How does that affect your desire to want or go out and do things? Answer. It's hard because, I'm a teenager, so I like to go out with my friends, but at the same time, I avoid a lot of things. And I've never told anyone about what happened to me until, now it's pretty public. But, none of my friends knew, so they probably just thought it was weird I was being dramatic. But in reality, I just have really bad PTSD. Page 20, question. And that probably makes you, if there's a decision to go out when you don't feel so hot physically, does it add to it? Answer, for sure, yes. Page 40, I want to talk about your loss of capacity to enjoy life. Let's talk about making friends. Let's talk about making new friends. How's that going? Have you met a guy you like? Answer, well, I recently made a new friend. He's understanding. But sometimes I'll really want to go out, but at the last minute I'll cancel.
Mr. Shapiro, I remember the testimony. I don't need you to read it, so I...
Okay.
Is there anything else you want to say
about... Well, I'd be happy to read the case law. The case law is all on all fours that in personal injury cases where the plaintiff is seeking intangible damages, the finder of fact is required to examine the quality of the plaintiff's life before and after the accident. It would take a great novelist like Tolstoy, Dickens, or Hemingway to use words to summarize the totality. If a photograph is worth 1,000 words, there's no better portrayal of what an individual's life was like than through photographs the individual has chosen to share through social media. And so These photographs are absolutely crucial to the defense of this case. Maya Kowalski has come to trial and testified that as a result of what All Children's has done, that she doesn't go out, that she doesn't know if she can go to college, that she doesn't know if she can go back to her school, that her quality of life is now limited or destroyed. For the first time at this trial, we're hearing for the first time, she doesn't even know if she's going to go to college. We've been prohibited from putting a single photograph in front of this jury in 2023. And I can think of nothing more important than for the jury to see she's out like a teenager. She's at homecoming. She's at prom. She looks healthy. It's a totally different depiction than what's been going on in this court. I respectfully can't foresee a reason how this would not be not just relevant to rebut the claims that she's made in this court, but absolutely necessary for us to be able to tell the jury, this is the life of Maya Kowalski today. We did not aggravate a pre-existing condition. She's out at prom. She's out in heels. She's has friends. It's a complete contradiction to her testimony. I struggle to see how this wouldn't be relevant.
Your Honor, first, the case cited there spoke of social media posts that the plaintiff has chosen to share. I point out first that these are not photos Maya Kowalski chose to share. Number two, the three photographs would be cumulative. We would suggest that one photograph may be probative. Number three, there's a 403 issue, and it's in poor taste to put in number one and number three. We think number two is the most appropriate. They can establish through number two, if we go back to it, please, which is the photo reel of her and her current boyfriend, that she indeed went to homecoming 2023, and she appears to be having a good time. They can make that point through that photograph. They do not need one of her friends dressed up as fairies on Halloween, or number one, either. They're not appropriate. So we object to the cumulativeness. We object to the 403 based on number one and number three, perhaps 404. That's our position.
I'll give you the first two photos, but you're not getting the third photo on cumulative and 403 grounds.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Corrales?
Oh, yes.
Or whoever's doing exhibits.
Yes. I think we're down to a couple here, Judge. On 3023, that's just needs redaction. We've agreed on what they are. I just need to have it done and show them tomorrow. Yeah. The one with the, on 3192, the one with the letter, smarter people than I figured out how we should do that. So I think I was saying we'll make 1A, but instead what we've done and we have it and we've marked it is 3192, page 1 and page 2. That's the email with the letter. It's up, Your Honor.
Okay, 3192, 1 and 2. Any objection as it's presented here?
No, Your Honor.
Court receives 3192-1 and dash 2.
Okay. 30, can I ask a different question, Judge, because we want to get this exhibit list ready, and there's only a couple more, and if necessary, we can do them in the morning, but I really want to address that we get right the list and how it's going to be presented to the jury, because we have to work on that. Can I hand the court? So this is, Excel spreadsheets don't print out great, but this is an example of an Excel spreadsheet that we created for Exhibit 1001, and so you may recall, if you turn the page, Judge, that top page on page 2 is a little messed up. I think we'll fix that. But then you can see it goes to 1002, which is not broken out, right? So we're struggling with how do we give an index type thing for the jury for 1001. That's the 1,000 pages of All Children's records. And so this is what we came up with, and I want to make sure that it's what you were thinking. If not, we need to adjust.
I mean, to me, the interior pages, you probably should put it in the next column over. It might be easier, but
I'm not quite following, Judge.
Okay. On Excel, you've got rows and columns.
Right.
So if right here is the main number.
Yes.
Then your sub number just the next.
In the same row. You're saying put the sub numbers in the same row.
Just put another column in there.
Before the description, you're saying.
Well, you could do it before the description or in the same row. When I say a different row, it's, you know, you've got the cells at the top A, B, C, and D. If
yes.
This is A, maybe the sub number should be in B.
Okay. And then the description in C?
In C.
Okay. Input?
No. Great.
Okay. Okay, I've gotten carte blanche. I like it. All right, so I understand. All right, so we will work on that. My goal, Judge, is to get that together and over to the other side. We may have some disagreements about language of the description, and I just don't know if we can get that done between now and tomorrow. So as long as we work over the weekend on the description, as long as the formatting was agreed to, that was the main thing.
The issue, though, is if I'm not seeing it, if the clerk's not seeing it for the first time until Monday, and we do closing arguments
okay.
on Monday, you know, with jury deliberations beginning Tuesday morning, it doesn't give the clerk's office any time.
Understood. And so when we're putting this in Excel, the intent, though, that we would be printing these for the jury, for the clerk and for the jury?
Well, the intent was there would be something in paper and then a little thumb drive that
okay.
they could search it electronically if they were so inclined.
Okay. All right.
I mean, you don't need all these graphics, just exhibit number.
Yeah, I don't know why the graphic's on there. I didn't request that.
You know, I don't think you should have separate lists for joint and separate lists for defense and separate for plaintiff.
Okay.
Just put them all, your exhibit numbers, just make them chronological and...
All right, so we don't have to identify whether it's a joint exhibit, a plaintiff's exhibit, or a defense exhibit, Judge? Just put it chronological?
Just put it, yeah,
as far as exhibit...
One
well,
sheet.
The exhibit numbers change depending on that. So the way we had it, again... Just because we have a short time, I'll make sure I get this right. We have on the Excel three tabs, joint, plaintiff, defense, that they could click on to bring it up. But you're saying just one tab and just longer.
I think it's going to be a lot easier if it's in one sheet.
Okay.
I don't know the inner workings of the courthouse. Will the clerks be here on Thursday morning when we have our discussion on this?
Yes.
But I suggest that if they give it to us tomorrow afternoon, we will work on it overnight and have it ready Thursday morning for the court to resolve any disagreements on language.
Yeah, they'll be here Thursday.
Okay. We'll do our best. All right.
Any other exhibits?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Three, two,
back,
two,
four. Okay.
3226, 3 to 3 and 4. I feel like we did this one, but maybe. So the purpose of this, Judge, is Maya Kowalski's description. We can take the photo out if you want, but it's the... Can you make that larger, please, Clay? The words. So this was posted and is her description of her disease and is also her description of her time at Tampa General.
So you're asking... This is asking for money?
We can take out, I don't, we can take out the money part if you want. Let's see. I think she's asking for them to tag Megan Trainor. I don't see an ask for money. So I missed it.
I have RSD and no money.
Oh, where's that?
So if anyone wants to, please visit the link in my bio and please donate.
Where? Oh, we can take that out. We could start with it all started July 3rd when I had my asthma attack, Judge. It's her description.
What is it that we're trying to use here?
Well, I think there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of evidence regarding her stay at Tampa General Hospital. This is her description of what occurred at that hospital.
And what day is this from again?
Can you go back, Clay? Sorry. Can you make it smaller so we have the date? We'd have to probably tweet it. We'll have to find a judge, but it was same.
Was this prior to the October 2016?
It is.
Yes.
It is.
Relevance, 403, cumulative. The jury's already aware that she likes Meghan Trainor. There's a song and video of her dancing to Meghan Trainor. The jury's already aware through the medical records of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital and those at Tampa General Hospital that she had a distinct hatred for that program. This adds nothing. It's cumulative of other evidence. It's not probative of anything. And the prejudice would be, what they want to do, I believe, is the statement of freaking wrong. They want to establish, again, that Maya used profanity or close to profanity. Again, so what?
No,
what's
that
probative of?
That didn't even cross my mind, Judge, to be honest. I wish the plan would stop giving me.
I will say I probably have heard, I don't know how many witnesses, where it seems like there's been a humongous emphasis on profanity.
I'm
saying, because it, like yesterday, that witness from yesterday, the nurse, I mean, almost all of that, with the exception of like one issue, was stuff we've already heard of many times. And so
Judge,
I'm trying to see what
this
does.
Here's what this has to do with, Judge. This whole case is based on a 10-year-old girl's recollection of what happened to her in this hospital. No one else witnessed everything she talked about. The dad's testimony is based on what Maya told him. Everything is based on a 10-year-old girl's recollection 8 years later or whatever on what happened to her in that hospital. This is her recollection of what happened to her at Tampa General Hospital. And I think it's important that the jury see her perspective of what happened in Tampa General Hospital as well. Because the whole case is based on her recollection. Everything about Kathy Beattie is based on Maya's 10-year-old testimony about what happened. This is her recollection of how poorly she was treated at Tampa General Hospital. It goes to her state of mind. It goes to that issue. And I think that's why it's relevant. It had nothing to do with the fact that she was freaking. I didn't even notice that, to be honest.
Well, the problem is this case
and
that
when
we're
her
actually...
RSD started. Sorry.
Is there any doubt that July 2015 date is, I mean, is anyone disputing that?
Yes, there's also evidence already in from the mom saying it started earlier than that, is my recollection, that started in June. And they also are alleging that it started from a twisted ankle that happened quite some time ago. And they're saying that it was a slow build. It didn't start right away. There's evidence that yes, it did start right away. It's all over the map, Judge. And this is further evidence of that. But again,
how does that talk to us about medical malpractice that either did or did not happen in October of 2016 in Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, which is not even in the same county? How does it talk to us about what happened in that hospital as far as battery and intentional infliction of emotional distress and false imprisonment? I don't see how this is anything other than cumulative.
Because, Judge, this is Maya's own words, as opposed to her mother, as opposed to her dad. This is Maya's own words, and her description of what happened to her at Tampa General Hospital. It shows her state of mind. It shows what causes her to believe that that was the worst thing that ever happened to her.
This is before the hospitalization at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
Yes, but it shows her perspective, because this whole case is based on that.
I'm sorry, Ms. Cross. You got this evidence in 14 different ways already.
All right, we'll proffer it, please.
What's next?
One second, please.
is, because the jury is here and ready to go.
Oh, okay, Judge. I think the other one that we have to talk about is the performance evaluations. That's going to take a few minutes, I believe.
Okay.
So we can. We don't need it for today. We don't need any of the others for today.
Well, let's, after we let the jury go, let's see if there's any time to address any more exhibits, because we are desperately short of time.
We only have like two or three. And I would say, Judge, the clerk advised me that 3035 has already been admitted. That was admitted on October 20th.
The Moores Children's Hospital records?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Are we ready to bring in the jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's bring in the jury.
Yes, sir.
Okay, please be seated, everyone. Members of the jury, I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct? And no one approached you about this case, is that correct?
Correct.
And no media involvement, is that correct?
Correct.
From the defense, who's next?
Defense calls Dr. Jenny Dolan.
I swear.
Good afternoon.
Can you please state your name for the jury, please?
I'm Jenny Dolan. I'm Dr. Dolan.
And what is your current position?
I'm the chief of pediatric anesthesia at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital.
Can you please provide the jury with the benefit of your education, training, and background from where you went to school all the way through residency, fellowship, that type of thing?
I did medical school in Colombia. I went to a Jesuit private medical school. The name was Javeriana University. It was an 8-year medical program. After I finished with medical school, then I did my social service year at the same institution. I was the director of the laboratory of physiology, and I was a physiology instructor for the School of Medicine. During that same year, I also did a program in business administration. Then after I finished with my social service year, I moved to the U.S. and I did my surgical internship at Jackson Memorial Hospital with the University of Miami, followed by a 3-year residency program in anesthesia. Again at the University of Miami, and then I did a pediatric anesthesia fellowship with the Jackson Memorial and Miami Children's and with the University of Miami. And in the last 5 years, I obtained a master's in public health from the George Washington University in D.C.
Can you tell the jury what your board certifications are?
I'm a board certified anesthesiologist, and I'm also a board certified pediatric anesthesiologist.
And do you contribute to any national organizations in your field of pediatric anesthesiology?
Yes, I am an active member at the national level. I am an active member of the Society of Pediatric Anesthesia. I am also a member of the Committee of Pediatrics in the Florida Society of Anesthesia, and I am a voting member of an organization that is called Wake Up Safe, which is the safety arm of the Society of Pediatric Anesthesia. And this organization is dedicated to provide and enhance and for the betterment of the pediatric patient under anesthesia care.
What about committees at All Children's Hospital where you're currently employed? Do you contribute to any committees and things of that nature?
I belong to multiple committees. I would say the few more important ones will be performance patient improvement program, that's called PIPS. I work closely with surgeons in the same thing, improving the care of the surgical patient undergoing the pediatric general anesthesia. Then I'm the leading anesthesiologist in something that is called COSP, which is Comprehensive Unit-Based Safe Program. We use teamwork. We use the science of safety, and we identify opportunities for improvement. So I am heavily involved in safety and quality, and I'm also a member of the Controlled Substance Committee, where we monitor the use of controlled substance throughout the institution, and we make sure that we follow the regulations.
Dr. Dolan, have you contributed to the literature in your field of pediatric anesthesiology? And you don't have to list every publication, but if you could tell the jury a little bit about your contribution to the scholarship in your field.
I have two publications in pain. One of them is a randomized control study, which what it means is that it is important, it's good, you know. The basis of the research is good. And my last two publications, one is where we use the theory of change and visual analytics and data to improve the management of controlled substances in the perioperative area. And then my last publication, it was on June and this summer, and it's in the main journal of pediatric anesthesia, and it is about cardiovascular arrest in the pediatric population.
Dr. Dolan, are you familiar with the use of ketamine in pediatric patients?
I'm very familiar with ketamine. Ketamine is a drug that we use frequently. It's part of our education in general. It's something that we are very familiar with it.
In your experience, is ketamine used for the treatment of pediatric CRPS?
It's not the first line of treatment. In general, you try to use other therapeutic measures that don't involve medication. The standard of care of CRPS in the pediatric population.
Maybe approach.
Dr. Dolan, in your experience as a pediatric anesthesiologist, what are the treatment modalities that you're familiar with for the treatment of pediatric CRPS?
Physical therapy, occupational therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Have you seen high dose anesthetic dose ketamine used for the treatment of pediatric CRPS?
Never in my almost 20 years of pediatric experience.
Was there a time that you came to render care and treatment to Maya Kowalski at All Children's Hospital on October 7th of 2016?
Yes.
who on your pain team at All Children's Hospital first encountered Maya Kowalski on October 7th of 2016?
From my pain team, that would be my nurse practitioner, Kay Rhodes.
And so Nurse Rhodes was the first person to talk to the family and see Maya?
Correct.
And that was on October 7th?
Correct.
After your nurse practitioner met with Maya and her family, can you describe your initial investigation into Maya's care before you actually saw Maya?
Yes. My nurse practitioner had spoken with the family, and then she also had a conversation over the phone with the pain doctor that that was taking care of them. She showed me the information, and it was my understanding that...
At any point did you come to know the doses that Dr. Hanna had administered to Maya Kowalski the day before she came to All Children's Hospital on October 7, 2016?
Yes.
She can answer that.
Yes. I myself called Dr. Hanna.
And what was your understanding of the doses that Dr. Hanna was providing to Maya Kowalski the day prior to her arrival at Johns Hopkins?
My understanding was that he was giving 1,250 milligrams of ketamine. He gave 4 milligrams of Versed, 1,750 milligrams of magnesium sulfate, and he said that he gave them over 4 hours. And it was my understanding that he no longer felt safe or comfortable and that the treatment had failed. And that's why he was sending her to us.
And we'll get to your documentation from October 7th later, but did you enter into your note on October 7th what you just testified to the jury about Dr. Hanna's dosing?
Correct.
Did you do any other investigation into Maya's case after talking with Dr. Hanna before you saw Maya on October 7th?
Yeah, the first thing, like when I saw my, when my nurse practitioner spoke to me, I thought that she made a mistake. Then after I spoke with him, I was very alarmed by the doses. Like those are lethal toxic doses, what she was getting. And I was very concerned, but at the same time, I questioned myself. I said, well, maybe this is something that I just don't know, you know? Maybe this is something in the adult pain world. So I called one of my colleagues from residency. Then I also called, and he's an adult pain doctor. Then I also called Dr. Richard Elliott, who is a pediatric anesthesiologist and pain management doctor. And I confirmed my beliefs that those doses, that my concerns were real, you know. And after I spoke with them, then I did my own literature search.
Okay. And after this investigation, did you arrive at a conclusion about the propriety of the doses that Dr. Hanna was administering the day before?
Objection. Sustained.
Did you have some concerns about the doses that Dr. Hanna was using?
Absolutely.
I'm going to overrule that objection.
Why don't we segue now, move over towards your first encounter with Maya Kowalski and her family on October 7th. Do you have an independent recollection of that initial encounter?
Yes, I went to the room. The first time I saw Maya awake, she was very pale, thin, agitated. She had big dark circles around her eyes. She was in the middle of the bed with her mom by her side. She was trembling. She was screaming. She was angry. She was crying. She was inconsolable. Sometimes she was like in a rage. It was like a very dramatic scene, you know. The communication with the family was difficult during that time.
at this point, I'd like to pull up your part of your note from October 7th and highlight one portion of it for the jury. This can be found at Joint Exhibit 1001-51, Clay. And we're going to be highlighting, it's in the first third of the page. We're going to highlight the history of present illness, a pain assessment, all the way down to medication request. And Dr. Dolan, if you could please read that. I have a couple of follow-ups for you.
Okay. The whole thing?
Yeah, please, just take a moment to read it.
Read it to yourself.
Read it to yourself
okay.
While the jury reads it, and I'll follow up.
Yeah, I was going to say. Finish.
Okay. In addition to Maya Kowalski's treatment with Dr. Hanna, did you also come to learn a little bit more about her past medical treatments with ketamine? And if so, please tell the jury what those were.
Yes, I was told that that she was taken for a ketamine coma to Mexico twice.
Had you ever heard of a ketamine coma prior to October 7th of 2016?
No, never.
Was there another medication request that the mother made on October 7th of 2016 for you to consider?
She asked me to put a caudal catheter, and she also asked me for an intrathecal clonidine infusion. An intrathecal clonidine pump.
Can you describe that for the jury, what an intrathecal clonidine pump is, where it goes, what it does, that type of thing?
So an intrathecal pump is a little device. But that device has a catheter that it is placed surgically into the space surrounding the central nervous system. The brain and the spine are part of the nervous system. And the brain and the spine is surrounded by a fluid that is called the CSF, the cerebrospinal fluid. And that catheter goes, the idea is that it goes into that fluid, and then that little pump, it will infuse that medication or whatever medication you decide to give. Those are more or less the basis of the procedure. It's an invasive procedure in the CSF. It has important risk, meningitis, severe infection, migration of the catheter, obstruction of the CSF. That CSF is constantly flowing around your brain and your spine, and those devices can obstruct the flow. The other thing that it could also happen is that the pump malfunctions, and it can give an overdose of the drug, or that it can create, because it's a foreign body that is not supposed to be there, also the body tries to reject it, and it can produce something that is called a granuloma, which can also obstruct the flow of the CSF.
Did at any point you advise Mrs. Kowalski about what you thought about the intrathecal clonidine pump she was requesting?
Yes, I told her that that we didn't recommend it and that we didn't do that at our institution. And if she wanted to have that done, she would have to look for another place.
Were you willing to help her find another institution that perhaps would place an intrathecal clonidine pump?
Yeah, yes.
So my understanding is you came up with a treatment plan both in the short term to deal with Maya's acute pain and both the long term to deal with her pain problem. Why don't you tell the jury what type of treatment plan you came up for to treat the acute pain issue Maya was experiencing on October 7th.
So injection, bleeding, compound, sustained.
Did you have a short-term plan to treat Maya's acute pain on October 7th? And if so, please tell the jury.
So we had an acute situation. She came very agitated. She came with severe generalized pain. She hasn't eaten or drinking for more than 5 days. She was demonstrating signs of withdrawal also and toxicity. So we needed to treat those three things, the pain, then the agitation, and then the toxicity and the withdrawal, and also we needed to stabilize her.
So what did you choose to do for the acute pain, what I'll call the short-term plan?
So we had a discussion with the parents and also with the PQ team, and we came out together with a plan.
And why don't you describe for the jury what that plan consisted of?
So the plan was to treat her pain. So I used an infusion of ketamine at a lower doses, normal therapeutic ranges. So I planned to start with that. With that, the logic was that I was treating the pain and I was also helping with the withdrawal symptoms, you know, and I was weaning her medication. Then the other medication that I added, it is called propofol, which is a pure sedative anesthetic medication that was purely for the agitation, and the plan was to just have it for the initial time, like for 4 hours. And then I added another medication that is called Presedex, which is also an analgesic, so it helps with the pain, but this is a medication that we heavily rely to treat symptoms of withdrawal. It treats the agitation and helps us with the withdrawal symptoms.
Did you also formulate a plan to treat Maya's pain issues on a longer term basis once you got the immediate pain under control?
So I also informed the parents that the standard of care in the pediatric
Objection.
Population...
Sustained.
Can you just tell the jury what long-term plan you came up with without reference to any standard of care issues?
So the treatment for pediatric anesthesia for CRPS in
Objection.
The...
Objection. Sustained.
Can you just tell them what you decided to do in terms of a plan for Maya Kowalski's long-term pain treatment?
After she will come out of the unit, the plan was for physical therapy, occupational therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy.
And why was it that you chose that plan of action for Maya's pain disorder?
Objection. Sustained.
Did Mrs. Kowalski respond at all to your recommendation for psychiatric involvement?
No, she actually got really upset. Both of them got very upset. She at some point they used foul language, but she also said, we are not crazy, we don't need that. I said, it's not that I believe that you are crazy. It is that you are living with the burden of a chronic condition, and you and your family need the coping mechanism to help with this process.
Now, what was your understanding of Maya Kowalski's diagnosis when she came in to Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital as determined by outside physicians?
That she had CRPS. She was diagnosed by an outside physician with CRPS. We took it as the truth, and we started managing it.
So when you began your management of Maya Kowalski, you did so with the belief that she had CRPS?
Correct. We accepted the outside facility, the outside doctor diagnosis.
And after October 7th, did you have an opportunity to provide care and treatment for Maya Kowalski a few days later?
Yes, I took care of her again on Sunday.
Okay, and that would have been October 9th?
Correct.
What do you remember about that interaction with Maya Kowalski and her family?
Objection, calls for narrative.
Do you have an independent recollection of your care and treatment of Maya Kowalski on October 9th?
She was doing better. She was calmer. I was able to talk to her. I was able to perform an examination. I felt that she was doing better.
What do you mean when you say she was doing better?
She wasn't agitated. She wasn't restless. She didn't have the palpitations. Like at the beginning, the first day, she was saying, I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm dying. On Sunday, it was completely different. My nurse practitioner and me, we were able to have the chat that you can have with a 10-year-old.
Now, as of Sunday, October 9th, was Maya Kowalski still receiving infusions of some medications at that point?
Yes.
And which medications was she receiving as of Sunday the 9th?
Well, propofol was only for the first four hours, but we were still on ketamine and Presidex.
On October 9th, did you come up with a weaning plan for Maya Kowalski?
Actually, the weaning plan we came up with a weaning plan from the very beginning, from October the 7th.
How do you describe to the jury what a weaning plan is and why you did it here for Maya Kowalski?
A weaning plan is to progressively start going down on the medications that the patient is receiving. Why? Because these medications that generate tolerance or that can generate dependence, those medications, if you stop them suddenly, then the patient can have a reaction because their body has gotten used to get those particular medications.
I'd like to show you a snippet of your note from October 9 of 2016. Can be found at Joint Exhibit 1001-630, please, Clay. And we're going to look right here at the middle of the page. There's a paragraph kind of smack dab in the middle, and we're looking at the very last sentence that starts with, "We plan to start weaning IV." If you would please highlight that so the jury can read. Dr. Dolan, do you see the portion that's being highlighted here in your note?
Yes.
Is this line here a fair and accurate representation of the weaning schedule you were just discussing for the jury?
Correct.
And what was Mr. and Mrs. Kowalski's agreement regarding the weaning schedule that was in place?
They were in agreement. Actually, that conversation was done in PICU, in the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit. Mr. Kowalski was present, but Mrs. Kowalski was over the phone.
And both parents agreed to this weaning plan?
Correct.
At a certain point on October 9th, did you have an opportunity to learn about Maya Kowalski's eating prior to her arrival at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
I knew that she had not eaten or drinking anything for at least 5 days.
And I'd like to show you a nursing note from October 9th that touches on that topic. And is it my understanding that you regularly rely on nursing notes when you're providing care?
Yes.
Okay. Clay, can you please put up Joint Exhibit 1001-2718, please? And I'd like to draw your attention to the bottom third of this. It is a text note from October 9, 2016 by a nurse, Christina Noblet, at 0600. That's 6 in the morning. Can you highlight where it starts? Patient also stated in the room. Under R46, yes. Based on your review of this note, what was Maya's eating history prior to her arrival at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
Objection to the extent it calls for speculation. Overruled.
I knew that she wasn't eating. I knew that she wasn't drinking. I knew that she had severe abdominal pain. And if you ask me about what I remember from that day, I remember being sitting at the nurse station in PQ, and I saw the nurse that was taking care of her. She was all excited, and she said, "Oh, Maya wants to eat a donut," and she was all happy.
Why don't we move on to the end of your note here? At the very end, you have an anesthesiologist note. We can find that at 633 Clay. And based on your review of this note from October 9th, did Maya seem more comfortable on the 9th than she did when you saw her back on the 7th?
Definitely.
And is that something you put in your note?
Yes.
Did her appetite seem to have improved on October 9th versus when she came in on October 7th?
Well, she said she wanted to eat. At the end, she didn't, but I know she wanted.
And I see here at the bottom of your note, tomorrow we will start weaning the infusions. Do you see that?
Yes.
And is that a reference to the weaning schedule you were talking about with the jury a little earlier?
Correct.
And I also see a reference here about facilitating a transfer to Nemours Children's Hospital in Orlando. Do you recall anything about the transfer of Maya Kowalski to Orlando?
Yes. I know the mom was interested in going to Orlando because they had a CRPS program. And at that point in time, if you see, I said I also provided the family a list of institutions with more resources for her type of condition. We didn't have the resources to provide the amount of physical therapy that she needed. And we didn't have the resources also to provide the psychological support. We didn't have a psychology dedicated for chronic pain. We did have a psychologist, but she had a full outpatient clinic. So that's why I told them I agree with transferring to Nemours.
Now, as of October 9th, had you stopped the propofol administration?
Yes, the propofol was only for four hours, initial 4 hours.
So that didn't continue past October 7th?
No.
Did you advise the family about whether you were going to escalate medications further or begin to taper them down?
Objection leading.
What do you recall telling the Kowalskis about whether the medication would continue to be escalated?
Well, I remember being called multiple times because the family wanted me to keep on going up on the drugs. And actually, during Saturday, when I was available by phone, but I was not present in the hospital, one of the other pediatric anesthesiologists called me.
Objection,
yeah, you can't talk about what anybody told
you. Okay.
During this October 9th visit with Maya Kowalski, did you have a chance to observe her physically?
Yes.
Did you notice any dystonia?
No.
Did you see any findings that were inconsistent with allodynia?
Hard to say at that moment because I really didn't press on it because of how agitated she was, so I didn't want it to precipitate anything.
Now, my understanding is after October 9th, the next time you encountered Maya Kowalski would have been November 1st of 2016. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, during that period of time from October 9th to November 1st, were there other members of Johns Hopkins' pain team that were tending to Maya, even if you weren't?
Yes.
Okay. And who were some of the individuals that were involved with helping to treat Maya's pain in that roughly month period of time?
I know for sure Dr. Richard Elliott, but at that point we were five of us that did pediatric pain. So any of the others, one of the pediatric doctors was on maternity leave, so we were four.
No, I got a little ahead of myself. I jumped forward to November 1st, but I meant to ask you about the use of a medication called Haldol. Do you recall back around October 12 and October 13. The pain service administering Haldol to Maya Kowalski on three different occasions.
Yes. Haldol is a medication that is widely used in the intensive care settings, and we use it specifically for agitation, and it's indicated for the treatment of toxicity or withdrawal symptoms of ketamine, alcohol, PCP, amphetamines. So that was the indication, but she only got three doses in a 48 hours period, and we discontinued the medication once we didn't need it anymore. And again, it was like a bridge between, we are winning her, you don't need to give more of the same medication, you are trying to win the patient. So then we used that as a anxiolytic.
Okay. So at the point that Haldol was given, the wean had been completed?
We had finished with I'm sure ketamine, yes.
And so why did the pain team decide at this point Haldol was a good option for about a 48-hour period?
Well, the example so that you can understand me is like if you are coming out of, let's say that you are an alcoholic and you're coming out of a detox.
So you said that the Haldol was used as a bridge. What did you mean by that?
Well, we are weaning her from all these medications. When you are weaning a patient from medications, they can show symptoms of...
Okay, approach for a further question. I apologize. Dolan, I would like to show you right now what's been marked as Joint Exhibit 1001, 1306, 1343, and 1345. And while we're pulling that up, I'll represent to you this is a medication administration record. The first one is from October 12 of 2016. Can you please highlight the entry that says Haldol, please, Clay? Dr. Dolan, based on your review of this record here, can you please give me the date and time that Haldol IV was administered to Maya Kowalski on October 12th?
At 2:46 p.m., 1 milligram of Haldol for agitation.
Okay. Now, moving to 1343, I'd like to show you another IV Haldol administration on October 12, 2016. And you can see this at the very, very bottom. It's the last portion of this medication administration. Dr. Dolan, based on your review of this medication administration record, what was the second time that Haldol was administered to Maya Kowalski at Johns Hopkins?
At 8:35 p.m.
And that was on October 12th?
October 12th, 1 milligram.
And then we'll go to the third time, which can be found at 1345. This will be at the very top. So please highlight that, Clay. And this, again, is Haldol IV. What was the date and time, Dr. Dolan, that Haldol was administered for the third time?
4 a.m., October 13, 1 milligram.
Okay. Based on your review of the All Children's Hospital medical records, did you locate any other administrations of Haldol in the All Children's Hospital chart other than the three we just went through?
No.
Now, I told you that we were going to get to the November 1st visit, so we're there now. This was now your third visit with Maya Kowalski. What do you recall, if anything, about your third visit with Maya on November 1st?
Objection, narrative.
Do you have a recollection of your November 1st visit with Maya Kowalski?
Yes.
What do you recall about that?
Objection, narrative.
How did Maya appear on November 1st of 2016?
She was sad. She was missing her family.
Okay. Did you take any steps to try to help her out because she was feeling down that day?
Yes. I asked her, how could I help her? What can I do to help you? How can I make it better? And she said that she wanted to interact with kids of her age. So I immediately called Child Life, and I asked them to please use young volunteers because to interact with Maya. And I also told them to step up their game and to involve her in everything and all kind of activities. Whatever activity they could involve her, I asked them to please have Maya on it.
How did Maya's functionality appear to you on November 1st as compared to when you first saw her approximately a month before?
It was a different child. You know, even though she was sad, she was able to participate in conversation. Her vital signs were normal. She didn't seem to be in any distress.
And my understanding is you had another visit with Maya Kowalski the next day on November 2nd of 2016. Is that correct?
Correct.
At this point, did you come to learn that she was participating more in Child Life Services at this point?
Correct.
Now, as of this date, Dr. Dolan, and I think you touched on this earlier, did Johns Hopkins have a comprehensive inpatient multidisciplinary team to treat CRPS?
We didn't at that time.
And at this point, what was Maya's therapy for her pain disorder consisting of as of November 2nd of 2016?
Can you show me the notes?
Yeah, sure. Clay, if you could put up 1001, 527. 528, well, is there a particular page? Do you want to see the addendum at the end? Or it's about a five-page note, so. Actually, what Clay, put up 533, please.
So the active medication, they are there. Okay. The page before, please.
Page.
Oh, no, they're there too. Okay. So she was getting pregabalin, she was getting acetaminophen, and she had tramadol. Those are pain medications.
Was she receiving any therapies at Johns Hopkins outside of, you know, pharmacological therapy?
Yes, she was receiving physical therapy, occupational therapy, and psychological support.
How did Maya seem on November 2nd as compared to November 1st, based on your recollection?
I thought she was doing well. She was engaged. She was participating.
And you had another visit with Maya Kowalski, I believe, on November 4, is that correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Did you continue to believe that she was making progress as of November 4th?
Correct. Okay.
And your next note was November 15 of 2016, if I'm correct. Is that your recollection as well?
Yes.
Okay. And how did Maya seem on November 15th as compared to back in November 2nd?
That day she was solemn, like upset. I remember trying to talk to her like I was doing the previous day. And that day she said that she didn't want to talk to me. That her lawyer said that we were all liars and we were lying to her. I was not giving her the right treatment, that I wasn't giving her the RDS treatment or the IVG infusions. I remember that.
Did you ever lie to Maya Kowalski?
No, sir.
Were you providing at that point what you believed to be the proper therapy for Maya's pain condition?
Yes.
And if I'm correct here, your last note for Maya Kowalski would have been on November 29 of 2016?
Yes.
And I see in your note that you make a reference to the importance of parents participating in any chronic pain program. Do you remember putting that in your note?
Yes.
Why is it important to have the parental participation when trying to address chronic pain in a pediatric patient? Based on your care of Maya Kowalski, why did you believe that parental participation in a chronic pain program would be important for Maya?
Same objections.
I'd like to go back in time now to Dr. Hanna's care and treatment of the patient. At any point, did you testified earlier you came to learn, you had an understanding about what Dr. Hanna was doing at his clinic, right?
Correct.
Did you have a chance to review Dr. Hanna's clinic records after you were done caring for Maya Kowalski?
Yes.
What did you come to learn about his infusions on October 6th of 2016 when you reviewed his records?
Objection. Can we approach?
Yes, please.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.